providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to focus a lot more in these next two segments on the resource sector, especially the precious metals, as I am chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, it's no denying that the precious metals market has drastically slowed. This week especially, minus the sell-off of gold at the tail end of the week, but still, not even a big move when you consider just how slow this whole week has been. And even going back really throughout the month of June here, gold seems to have flatlined right around that $1,900, and silver seems stuck right around that $28 level. It really brings up the thought to a lot of the seasoned precious metals investors of seasonality. Now, I know a lot of technicians hate to talk about seasonality, but there is no denying that typically over summer, in a normal summer, the market slows broadly, and that carries over into the precious metals. Jeff, I have to ask you, do you think, because things have really started to open up in the U.S., even Canada's moving towards a reopening, do you think that seasonality or the summer doldrums are here early and they could be here for a while?
Well, yeah. It's undeniable that there's seasonality. You could argue about the causes of seasonality and the permanence of it, and it does vary from year to year. And you do have years, for example, the last 2 years, you've seen strength in gold and silver prices in July, which is unusual on a historical basis. But, you know, over the last 2 years, you've seen prices rise primarily for gold, and silver's come along primarily for the ride with gold in July into early August. And that has to do with the August COMEX gold contract, and it's overridden seasonality. What we always say is, you know, seasonality exists. You can do the math. You can see the seasonality. You can see that prices tend to be weaker in the second and third quarters after a stronger first quarter. You know, and then you can argue about why that is. You know, but what we always say at CPM Group is that, you know, actual event-driven price activity trumps, excuse that verb, overrides seasonality. So there's a seasonality there, and you can say, okay, you know, that means that the prices should be weaker June, July, August, you know, sell in May and go away. And there are reasons, you know, factories shut down, they go on rolling vacations, auto industry retools, people go on vacation. There are reasons why fabrication demand tends to be slower. There are reasons why investment demand tends to be slower. People go away on vacation and they sit in the mountains or at the beach and they think about what's happened in the first half of the year and what they're going to do when they go back to work in September. You know, so that all factors in there. But what's overridden gold and silver this year, it's funny because, yeah, a lot of the bugs say, oh, my God, gold is so low. It's stuck below 90. It's stuck around $1,900. We're saying no. You know, we think gold is strong. We had thought that, you know, gold's been trading in, say, 1860, 1920 range over the last 2 or 3 weeks. We had thought 6 months ago that the price would probably be in a 1760, 1820 range at this time. So we're about $100 higher than we thought we would be. And that reflects the fact that it reflects several things, but one of the things it reflects is that the realities of 2021, especially the opening up of economies and stepping away from the lockdown, and people are going out and eating out again and traveling and taking vacations and having dinner parties, you know, the recovery from 2020 has overridden the seasonality. And it's overridden, and so, you know, as I said, you know, gold prices are probably $100 higher than you would have thought they would have been if you were just looking at the seasonality.
So, Jeff, let's talk about some of the main drivers behind the gold price now, because in all fairness, look, you are right. But you're not alone in the fact that you thought gold would be a little bit weaker heading into summer. $1,900 for gold is still a very strong level after an eight-month correction. Gold has bounced back fairly strongly, especially over May and most of June. What are the driving factors here? Is it inflation and the higher inflation data that we have been seeing?
Well, I think that investor expectations of inflation have been causing investors to buy some gold and silver. But I think that other economic and macroeconomic factors have been much more important. Specifically, you know, there we did see weakness in the dollar, and it wasn't so much that the dollar was declining, and, you know, in recent days it's actually shown some strength, but it was investor expectations the dollar would decline, which was causing them to move money out of dollar-based assets into gold. And then interest rates. You had an interest rate scare, if you will, where interest rates rose in the first quarter, but since that time they've come back down. And, you know, they rose from 1 to 1.74%, and now they're like yesterday it was 1.46 for the 10-year Treasury bonds. You know, so you're seeing low interest rates on a nominal basis. You're seeing negative interest rates on a real basis. You're seeing enormous monetary and fiscal stimuli, which are kind of causing some of those inflation concerns, but they're also flooding the world with money. And where are you going to put that money? Because another factor is the very strong stock market. You know, and people who have made a tremendous amount of money in the stock market are increasingly worried. They have very high PE ratios. Regardless of which metric you look at, the stock market overall is wildly overvalued, and there are a lot of people who are very nervous. So you've got money coming out of the stock market moving into gold and silver. You've got money coming out of interest-bearing assets moving into gold and silver. And I think that those factors, inflation is in there in the mix of things that are causing people to do that. But I think that the race for returns and the search for returns is actually something that's probably more important in a lot of investors' minds than inflation.
So, Jeff, touching on your comment about the U.S. equity markets, they are still pretty much at all-time highs, though. So what is this rotation you speak of out of the markets into the metals?
It's very tenuous, you know. It's very tenuous, but you are seeing it. And you can't, you know, the reality is that you've got $100 trillion equity market, $50 trillion of that is in the U.S. equity market, and the gold market's probably like, what, $3 trillion or something? So you can't move en masse out of stocks into gold, but you can move some. So I think that's there. But, you know, you've got a very nervous people. But, you know, I tell the story, in 2015, the Shanghai stock market, in 2012, you know, 2011, 2012, into early 2013, Chinese investors were buying tremendous amounts of gold. And then they shifted and they started buying Chinese stocks. And the Shanghai stock index went parabolic in early 2015. And I was saying to our clients, I said, you know, you guys have gotten out of gold. Maybe you should take some profits in a parabolic Shanghai stock market and move them into gold. And the universal view was, no, we're Chinese. And we're going to stay in until somebody yells fire, you know, because we all think that we can be the first one out the door. And no one's going to leave this party until someone yells fire. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, they said they're Chinese. I didn't say that. The reality is that American investors and investors around the world who invest in the U.S. market are doing the same thing. They all look at it, you know, it's the reverse of Catskill food. It's like, you know, gosh, the stock market looks grossly overvalued. I ought to be worried, but I'm not leaving because I've been saying that for 5 years now, that the stock market, actually more like 10 or 11 years since, you know, the stock market's been moving up steadily in a lockstep way, really since 2010. And, you know, investors have been saying, well, the stock market looks so overvalued, I should out, but I'm not, because a year from now it looks even more overvalued and I'm still not leaving, you know. And I think that that's happening. We're doing in our, we've got a chart that we're using in the presentation later today, Friday the 11th, which is the U.S. stock market, and it shows this very narrow channel of price increases from 2010 into about 2018 or so. You know, it's gotten more volatile since then because it's so high. But the reality is that the decapitalization that has been driving that stock market higher continues. And no one's going to leave that party until it's quite clear that the party is over.
I agree with that, Jeff. But following up on the comments, then, if everyone thinks that the stock market is overvalued, but no one's leaving the party until it sounds like bigger correction happens, does that mean we're set up for not just a level-headed correction, a fast, sharp correction, which when we see that typically does hit a wide range of assets.
Yes, that's true. And it's not, you know, let's be honest here. Yeah, it's not a black and white issue. It's shades of gray. And, you know, you could say I'm not leaving the party and take 1% or 2% of your profits and move them into gold. And that's, I think, what we're seeing among institutional investors and high net worth individuals and family offices. They're not leaving the party. They're not buying 100% coverage with S&P puts, but they are taking steps, including buying gold and silver, with some of their profits to protect some of their losses.
So, Jeff, is this all speaking to at least the general rise in gold, gold staying around 1900, the decrease in yields, and the at least short-term little bounce that we've seen in the U.S. dollar? It's not a huge bounce, but there is a little bit of strength in the dollar, and if you go back on a weekly chart, the dollar did just put in a slightly higher low than the one at the very beginning of 2021. Is this all just talking to a more defensive trade, a more defensive mindset that investors, large investors have?
I think, I'm not sure if it's defensive or offensive. I'm never quite sure about that, but it's definitely more diversified. But the reality is, you know, okay, you know, interest rates. Everybody was panicking about rising interest rates, lower bond prices in the first quarter. Now that's reversed and people want to buy bonds, U.S. Treasuries, because it's rising. You need U.S. dollars to buy those bonds. Everybody was kind of panicking about the stock market in the first quarter. Now everybody says, okay, you know, this party's continuing. You need U.S. dollars to buy U.S. stock. So there is a demand for the dollar because people want to do that. And so that's supporting the dollar. And so, you know, and it's a reflection of investors saying, I'm worried about yields. I'm worried about the stock market's valuation. I'm not necessarily going to take all my money out and put it into gold right now, but I am going to take steps to start to protect my portfolio from what could be a relatively violent and sudden correction in the stock market that could actually coincide with a reversal in the recent decline in Treasury yields.
Well, Jeff, it sounds like we are still then all just waiting for another correction in the stock market, as the U.S. markets have, in all fairness, gotten fairly boring, but it's boring to the upside, right? So that continued strength there. Let's look ahead to next week, because next week is another Fed meeting. All eyes are always on the Fed, and everyone's just waiting for some announcement of a pullback in the easy monetary policy with the recent higher inflation and also the general restart that's going on in the U.S. Do you think the Fed finally starts to say or starts to tell us that they're going to be tapering some of their policies?
I don't think they'll say that per se next week. You know, they already have said that they are ending one of the programs that they started in 2020 during the pandemic. But that's, you know, that's not the larger monetary support program that they're doing. I think that they'll probably pretty much reiterate what they've been saying. They may have a little bit more of a skew toward, hey, the economy is stronger. We're now seeing some of the inflation that we had looked for before we started saying that we're going to taper. But, you know, I don't know that they're going to make a major indication of imminent change in their policy, because they do believe that this inflation is transitory. They do believe that there are still tremendous fiscal issues that need to be resolved before they can take off their life support equipment. So I don't know that. I think they'll be very cautious about signaling any imminent tightening.
So that transitory word, when it comes to inflation, I know the Fed's sticking to it. A number of commentators are saying it still could be transitory. There's also a lot of commentators saying, wake up, people. It's not transitory. This inflation is here to stay. When are we going to know for sure, Jeff? What constitutes transitory and not transitory? Because in all fairness, it's now 2 months that we are starting to see higher inflation.
Well, yeah, 2 months is transitory in my book. You know, I think that you have to get into, let's say, the second quarter of 2022. If you still have high inflation, and again, you know, well, first off, if you still have high inflation in the core and in the headline figures in the second quarter of 2022, then you've got an indication that this is not transitory and it doesn't simply reflect coming out of lockdown and the recovery of the economy. But the other thing is, you know, as I was alluding to earlier, you have to look at the components. That will give you a better indication as to whether or not this is a transitory or a more permanent move toward higher inflation. And, you know, I just look at the world. I look at the excess labor, the excess, and, you know, it's funny because we have this incredible situation here where we have record numbers of unemployed people in the United States and record numbers of unfilled jobs. And it's great because the guys who have been inflation bulls for 40 years and have been wrong, you know, keep saying, this is it. You know, I told you back in the 1980s and 1990s that inflation would come back. Here it is, you know. And so they can say, well, look at all these unfilled jobs. This is going to have to be inflationary. But the other people say, yeah, but look at the systemic unemployment, not only in the United States, but on a global basis, which we had before the pandemic, and the pandemic has just worsened. And we knew it was going to get worse going forward because we're moving to computerized manufacturing, computerized service provision, computerized agricultural harvesting, and that's just going to exacerbate the surplus labor. Then you have surplus manufacturing capacity and surplus real estate, commercial real estate, and surplus retail capacity. You have Main Street being decimated by the Walmarts and Amazons of the world. And that's not just jobs. That's also tax bases for local economies and other things. So there are a lot of deflationary and disinflationary pressures that people will be watching. And I think you have to pay attention. And, you know, but when people say transitory, it's not 2 months that we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, 2, 3, 4 quarters. If we're into the second quarter of next year and we still have, you know, 4%, 3% inflation, then it's not transitory.
Okay. Thanks for that timeline, because really, I don't think there is necessarily a definition of transitory, but it really all depends on how the Fed sees this inflation. Jeff, let's just summarize here with a couple comments on the actual or some other metals prices. Silver right around that 28 level. All eyes are on that 28.50 level. What's been your assessment of silver throughout this rebound in gold? But in all fairness, silver in the last almost 10, 11 months has been just in a range.
Yeah. It's funny because we keep thinking that the range is going to break, and it will at some point. But right now, you know, I mean, we're looking at a short-term range of, yeah, well, look, it's been $27.20 to $28.50, $29 for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And if you go broader, it's like $25.80 to $30 over the last, you know, 11 months or whatever you say. You know, and we think that that broader range probably is going to continue for the next several years. And those are high prices for silver. People have to understand, you know it's this crazy thing. And again, you know, it's like there are people out there waiting for silver to get to $100, and some of them have been waiting since 1981 for silver to get to $100, and they're still waiting, and they're still convinced it's there. And when you say why, you know, why, and they say, well, you know, the tremendous growth in silver demand. Well, silver fabric demand was off like 5 or 6% last year, and it's only projected by us to recover about 1.3% this year. And that green revolution right now is on paper. You are seeing silver use and solar power, but a lot of these other things are very ethereal. When people say, well, you know, the green revolution is going to use a lot of silver, you say, how? They say, in different ways. Say, what kind of different ways? Well, you know, magnets, I guess, or electric motors or electric vehicles. And it's like, no, you know, that's not necessarily there. So a lot of that's hypothetical. So we think that the silver price could actually stay in, say, a $25 to $30, $32 range for the next year or two. Long term, we think it's going to rise, but not because of fabrication demand. We think it's going to rise because of investment demand.
What about commodities broadly then? Because you look at something like base metals, even energy, those are all up. Crude is ending the week here over $70 a barrel. Copper is over $450 right now. There's still a lot of strength in commodities. Do you see that continuing?
I think that it'll mitigate somewhat. over the next 12 months or so. You know, we thought that copper, we think that copper price is a little bit overvalued, and we're trying to pull together some historic data to support that. But we've just been busy with other things. Oil, we thought, you know, it probably had a cap around $65, $68 a barrel. And yeah, it's over $70. So there's a little bit more strength in oil prices than we thought. Some of that is coming out of the lockdown. Some of it is supply chain disruptions. But some of it also just reflects stronger demand. I think that the prices don't necessarily plunge back, but they don't necessarily keep rising at the pace that they have over the last six months or so.
Okay, final comments then here. Jeff, deals with the majors, whether you're looking at major gold miners, even major base metal miners, miners in general are making a lot of money, building stronger balance sheets. What do you think that means for the broad sector of metal stocks?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Canadian companies, and it's not just mining companies. I mean, we're seeing some of these companies say, we've got so much money, we're going to like dividend a bunch out to investors. And you're seeing the same thing with banks. You know, there's a great article in the Financial Post, I guess, today about the tremendous, like $80 billion of excess capital at banks in Canada. And these guys are saying, well, we just can't think of how to deploy this, so we're going to dividend a lot of it out. That's decapitalization. That's like, you know, I'm sorry, we're hiring you. We, the shareholders, are hiring you to utilize this capital to make money going forward. And to some extent, some of these guys are saying, well, we just can't do that. We can't grow this company. You know, I do think that you'll see more mergers and more acquisitions of the majors because they're cash rich. But it's, you know, those are going to be pricey mergers because they're based off of higher gold prices and silver prices and copper prices right now. So I do think you'll see more M&A and more acquisitions of mid-tier and smaller companies by majors. And you'll probably see higher dividends going forward and maybe more buybacks of shares.
All right, Jeff, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. Comprehensive update there, mostly on precious metals, a little bit more on the base metals. But overall, look, commodities are still strong and seem to be maybe in a bit of the summer doldrums right now. But again, there's a lot of news coming out, especially out of the stocks, and a lot of good news too. So I think it is a good time to really be paying attention to some of that news. Jeff, I always appreciate your comments. I'll have you back on the show again soon. Everybody, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.